Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Last month, the Bob Dylan Archive announced their plans to create a public home for the archive in the Tulsa Arts District. The Seattle-based architectural firm Olson Kundig won the competition. They're well known for doing museums all over the Northwest and around the country. They'll design the Bob Dylan Center and exhibit space, which will be located at the northwest corner of Archer and Martin Luther King Boulevard. The center will curate an exhibit from the over 100,000 items, which have accumulated over six decades of the artist's career, ranging from handwritten manuscripts and notebooks to film, photographs, unreleased concert and studio recording, ephemera, and more. We'll also host temporary and traveling exhibitions, both on Dylan, his contemporaries, and influences, as well as exhibits on the times he inhabited. The center will break ground in 2019 and open in 2021, but already the archive is undertaking programming on Dylan's art and times. This Sunday marks the second film event curated around Dylan's novel Tarantula, a stream of consciousness book of the 1960s. That takes place this Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Woody Guthrie Center with my guest today, Michael Chaikin, the curator of the Bob Dylan Archive. Michael Chaikin, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's great to be here again.
Last month, the Dylan Archives announced their plans for the Bob Dylan Center, which will begin construction in 2019. New facility right in the heart of this, what's become a block of museums and exhibit space in the heart of the Tulsa Arts District. Obviously, you got to be excited about that. And I imagine a lot of Dylan fans are excited about going to have access to this material.
Yeah, absolutely. And since the archive started arriving roughly 2 years ago in Tulsa, the ball game has really been to build essentially a center, a cultural center, what we're calling the Bob Dylan Center, which is essentially going to be the public-facing entity of this entire project. So the archive, or most of the archive, is now in Tulsa, and we're getting another big shipment actually next month. And we've been rehousing it, we've been cataloging it, and we've opened it up to researchers, but it's not really open to the public yet. And so the Bob Dylan Center is really going to be the place where the public will be able to come, look at the manuscript material, listen to recordings, watch film and video. So the archive is essentially going to be the beating heart of the Bob Dylan Center.
Now, you mentioned you're getting more memorabilia materials from the Dylan and his estate at this point. Has there been any new discoveries from just, you know, things that were locked away in a filing cabinet and all of a sudden, wow, here it is?
It's a good question. The short answer is yes. And so, you know, there's two things that are happening. I mean, one, Bob is still out there. He's still working. Sure. He's still recording. So all the new material is going to be coming to us. But, you know, Bob's been finding things. You know, tucked away in closets and garages, and, you know, very generously, he's been sending stuff here. So we have found some, you know, fantastic, a lot of very interesting correspondence. Also some more, you know, personal recordings and home recordings and things like that that are all making its way to Tulsa. And there's going to be an announcement about some of this stuff in the next month or so when we actually get some of the new material here and we've had a chance to process it a bit. But yeah, there's more, mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like, you know, there's going to continue to be more.
So is it a situation where he discovers maybe a lyric that he wrote off in the middle of the night and he goes, hey, this was not bad.
Stuff like that. Also, a lot of letters, fan mail, even fan mail from the 60s and stuff is very, very interesting because it paints a very, and, you know, I guess the question is, why would he keep that stuff? I have no idea. But, you know, it exists. And it's interesting because if you look at some of this stuff and you read some of this stuff, it really does paint a very interesting portrait of that moment. And certainly the way, you know, his fans were reacting to him and what he meant to them. We're talking like 65, 66, 67, so kind of his peak 60s moment. So it's all interesting for us because, you know, we're not only looking at Bob and his working methods, but we're also trying to paint a much broader picture of Bob in his times and the things he was influenced by and the things that he influenced and certainly the sociological aspect.
So what can you learn from a fan letter, say, from 1966 or so, that tells you something about the time?
Sure. I mean, if it's more than just like, hi, Bob, can I get your autograph? you know, it could be a letter from a teacher who's saying, you know, I heard your record. You know, I'm trying to understand this. I would like to be able to, you know, teach this song in my class. You know, could you give any insight? Now, whether or not Bob's going to give any insight is a whole other matter. But you get a very interesting cross section of people who were moved by Bob's music and were trying to reach out to him in some way and had questions. And, you know, so some of those questions are kind of eternal questions. I imagine some of these letters could have been written yesterday. But you do get a sense of, like, you know, who was he reaching? You know, and where was this music going? It wasn't all just hipsters and you know, music aficionados or what have you, but, you know, just regular people.
I would imagine people in the social justice movement.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
You know, all sorts of things. That was even before we had a term, social justice movement.
Yes.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the center. The center is going to be located, as I understand it, just north of the Zero Center on what's the parking lot on that block.
Correct.
That also includes the Philbrook Downtown.
Correct.
And the Woody Guthrie Archives.
Yeah.
You've engaged an architect, Olson Kundig, a very famous architect in the Northwest. They'd done lots of museums. What was special about their design?
Well, the process of finding an architect was a long process. I mean, we started this, you know, this search for an architect, you know, more than a year ago. And basically, you know, we put out what they call an RFQ, essentially a request for qualifications, that the George Kaiser Foundation was looking to partner with an architect and an exhibition partner. And that went far and wide, and we got hundreds of applications. But it was, the process was, you know, there were many steps to it. So we got hundreds of applications, and initially our thought was we were going to put the Bob Dylan Center in the Tulsa Paper Company, which is on the opposite corner of where the Woody Guthrie Center is. We were going to essentially reappropriate that building. And so when a lot of firms realized, oh, this is a reappropriation project, that's not what we do, it cut maybe in half the number of applicants. For Olson Kundig, that's exactly what they do. They're a firm that loves working in old warehouses and reappropriating old warehouses. So it was kind of, for them, I mean, like Tom Kundig said, we were like slobbering a path to Tulsa. And, you know, as soon as they heard that this was a possibility, they came out to Tulsa immediately and wanted to just get a lay of the land and wanted to see what the architecture was like, just really wanted to get a feel for Tulsa and all the incredible architecture that's here, from Bruce Gough to the Frank Lloyd Wright House, to the Yamasaki building, the Bank of Oklahoma. And they were just blown away by all the Art Deco. And so they really were like a target. They just kind of came to Tulsa, and they kind of, they also wanted to get a sense of who was building a lot of these new buildings in the downtown area. And they ended up meeting Chris Lilly and Lilly Architects, who, you know, fortunately for Tom, Chris was a big admirer of Tom's work, and they were very simpatico. And Olson Kundig partnered with Lilly Architects. You know, Lilly was going to be their, you know, was essentially their ground crew and is helping to conceive this thing because, I mean, Lilly Architects know the lay of the land maybe better than anybody here. But so this process went on, and we had about four or five finalists, and they were all excellent in their own way. The interesting thing about Olson Kundig was a lot of these firms partnered with outside exhibition folks. You know, there'd be an architect, and then they would find a crew who would do the exhibition. Olson Kundig do all that in-house. So one of the principals at Olson Kundig is an architect named Alan Maskin, who also works very closely with museums internationally on exhibitions, and he's done some pretty high-profile, you know, worked with some pretty high-profile museums. And they were, you know, the fact that they were both Dylan guys and they really understood this thing as being, you know, we're not building a shrine to Bob. We're doing something for Tulsa and the surrounding community. We're looking at Bob from all these different angles. We're not building a Bob Dylan museum per se. I mean, it'll be, of course, be the place where people can come and engage with the archive. But we're looking to do a variety of things around Bob Dylan as an artist and influence. And so, you know, they came up with a design that was really interesting, very, very flexible, so we can change the space if we needed to, and we could have outside exhibitions coming in and out. And Tom's an interesting guy because, you know, as prominent as he is in the architectural world, he really thinks architecture should almost kind of take a back seat, that the architecture should almost be invisible, that it's really the material that needs to come front and center. And so they just had a very interesting, innovative design that wasn't too techie, it wasn't too modern. But the curveball, or not really a curveball, but the thing that changed was after we selected Olson Kunding and we were kind of specking out the Tulsa Paper Company and looking at the exhibitions that we have planned, we realized that it would actually be more cost effective to build from the ground up than it would be to have to gut the Tulsa Paper Company and redo the whole thing and redo the electrical, redo the air conditioning. And then also we wouldn't be able to necessarily fit the exhibitions we have planned into that space. Or we could do it, but it would be a little bit more difficult. So if you build from the ground up, you can build essentially around the exhibitions. And so we realized very quickly that there was this empty lot immediately behind the Zarro building, the Tulsa Paper Company. And it, you know, we were doing this kind of walking tour of Tulsa, and it just kind of hit us like a lightning bolt, like, oh, wait, why didn't we think of this from the get-go? Like, clearly this is the spot. It's kind of diagonal now from the Woody Guthrie Center. There's a beautiful alleyway in the middle that we hope to be able to open up and turn into more of a public space. So, and for Tom, he's very excited because, okay, I have an opportunity to put a new building in Tulsa.
And he's done urban museums where it's not sprawling, it's vertical.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. So yeah, that's right. Obviously what this is going to have to be.
That's right. And yeah, they're just great guys. We have a really good camaraderie with them. We like the camaraderie among the team. I mean, Tom and Alan have been working together for many, many years. It's like they could finish each other's sentences. Mm-hmm. They're just salt of the earth guys, and there's no ego involved, and they've been really impressive. So, you know, to be able to work with them is just, for me, it's just unbelievable. What a privilege.
So the architectural renderings you saw were based on the Tulsa Paper Company?
Correct.
And so this is going to be a completely different design now.
Yes, yes.
Exterior design.
Absolutely. I think some of a lot of the exhibition ideas that Olson Kunding presented and we've been working with them with, you know, I think a lot of those things are going to stay. But now we're going to be able to move them into a space, you know, with like the correct ceiling height and to make sure that we're able to kind of do this thing so it's comfortable and it's spacious. So it's going to be a whole new building.
Well, film is such a big part of what Bob Dylan has been. He was documented so much. Is there going to be film space? Is there going to be something? I know there's listening posts where, somebody could go from station to station to hear various portions of Bob's output and how it changed over the years. But I would assume film has got to be a part of it, meeting space, community space, or musical space.
Yeah, I mean, audio and film are going to be a big part of the Bob Dylan Center. And essentially, it's the nature of the archive or the texture of the archive that is ultimately determining, you know, what the center is going to look like. So Bob's archive is, you've got maybe half of it are his manuscripts and or his papers, but the other half of it is all audio and video. So his session tapes, his concert recordings, and all the film that it was shot on Bob. And, you know, Bob's been involved with, you know, 5 or 6 films, but each one of those films, there's also like 20 to 30 hours of outtakes from them that we have access to and we could show and use at the Bob Dylan Center. So the AV side of this thing is going to be really important for us. And it also gives us the ability to kind of move things in and out. So nothing is there for too long or too permanent. We could kind of move around in the space almost in like a repertory fashion. So yes, there will be a couple of dedicated film spaces, and I think the experience of seeing that stuff, you know, one of the spaces might be a little bit more traditional, the other space might be a little bit more wild. But I just think the space itself will be a very kinetic, very energized space with a lot of film material, and there's tons of it, and you know, Bob worked with some of the greatest cameramen, so this stuff is just gorgeous. So we've been, in preparation for the center, we've been scanning everything to HD. We've been making HD scans of all the old outtake footage and this stuff. It's incredible how well some of the 16mm footage from the 60s has.
I would think even things like rehearsal, tons. You know, rehearsal tapes would be important because from a curatorial standpoint, you know, okay, you have some iconic Dylan song. How did it change? Just as we do that with classical music and all sorts of music changes over time. And it could be from the very first early performances. If you have a live tape of that to, you know, a version in the studio that doesn't work to the version in the studio that eventually becomes the final record?
There's a number of songs in the archive. I'll just give one, for example, Tangled Up in Blue, because it's one of his more popular songs from the Blood on the Tracks albums. There's a lot of songs where you could take, like Tangled Up in Blue, where you'd be able to see the very first manuscript of that song, Bob's first attempt at getting the lyrics down, to a recording of the first time he stepped to a microphone to sing it in the studio, to every single iteration of it in the studio, so every take of it, to the first time he played it live, to how he's changed it over the years live, to rewrites that he's done. He's rewritten the song several times. And so you really can see that process through decades. And, you know, Tangled Up in Blue is just one example of how we can do that. So we're trying to figure out a way, because Bob's manuscripts are really dense. I mean, if you look at them, they look almost like a Jackson Pollock painting, some of them. Really, like crossword puzzles. So I think if you give that to people flat, there's a certain, you know, there's a certain wow factor there. But to really be able to like move into those manuscripts, we need to figure out a way to digitize them, blow them up, let people, if there's a screen, if people are interested in a particular line or phrase, we have to figure out a way for people to, if they're interested, to be able to move into this material in some way. So it isn't just, you know, something flat that they're being presented. And the interactivity, I think, is really going to be a big part of the Bob Dylan story.
So when he's writing lyrics, it's like, you know, in the margins, that sort of thing. And all of a sudden, if you use some sort of digital technique, you can, and you're hearing it, you can actually put it in order and sort of make sense of what you're seeing.
Exactly.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting. My guest today is Michael Chaykin. He's the curator of the Bob Dylan Archives. The Bob Dylan Center has announced plans for their public facility to begin construction in 2019, to complete it in 2021. And it will be just northeast of the Woody Guthrie Archives at the corner of Martin Luther King and Archer.
Archer.
And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, let's talk a little bit about the archives themselves, which is housed at the Helmrich Center out at Gilcrease. Are researchers already using the facility? Are they? What sort of research are researchers coming in to look at?
Yeah, we have
because this facility, I should say, is for professional historians, pop culture people who are doing scholarly work on his material. So what sort of questions are they asking?
Yeah, so we actually have two people in this week. One of them is a Harvard professor who recently wrote a book called Why Bob Dylan Matters. And he's been up and back to Tulsa a few times. Yeah, I mean, at this stage, we have to be very careful with the material because it's not fully processed yet. But having scholars and people who really know and understand this material has been helping us to catalog it with a lot more efficiency. So, the things that people have been requesting, graduate students, writers from various newspapers, a lot of professors, have been some of the things that I guess most people would expect, and some unexpected things too. I mean, a lot of people are very interested in the Blood on the Tracks notebooks and that period. But we've gotten like four or five requests for information about Tarantula, which is this crazy book that Bob wrote in the mid 60s. And we have four or five different iterations of that manuscript. And there's been a number. And this is Tarantula is a relatively obscure moment in Bob's total career. But strangely, there's been a lot of interest in that book. And so we've had like three or four people in just looking at the Tarantula material. But I don't know. I mean, we've had things from, it just runs the gamut. We've had religious scholars who are interested in looking at some of Bob's work. We have film people that are interested in looking at the editing notes of some of Bob's films. It really runs the gamut. And again, you know, the Dylan Center is where the public is going to be able to. There's a little bit of a frustration, I know, because I hear from them, from fans saying, you know, I want to see this stuff. How do I see this stuff? Why do I need to have a Harvard degree? And I'm sympathetic to all that, and we're working hard to make it possible for people to really use this stuff. I mean, the other responsibility that we have is we also have to preserve this material, you know? So the preservation side of things, which isn't very sexy, I guess, for the public, it's also our responsibility. So we can't just let people through nonstop. Also, at least for the papers at this point, we're trying to keep as much as we can offline. I mean, I imagine when the Dylan Center opens, it's going to be harder because people will be there with their phones. But, you know, we really want people to come to Tulsa. And if you're deep into Bob Dylan and you're really studying this stuff, you're writing stuff, we would like you to come and spend some time in Tulsa and see what's going on here, see what's happening here, because there's a lot that's changing and moving. And you know, we're also ambassadors of Tulsa. We're not just doing this for the greater glory of Bob Dylan.
Well, Michael Chaykin, I'm glad you mentioned Tarantula, because this has been sort of your summer work. Has been putting together this film series about this very crazy, of its time book, which I'm surprised there's a lot of people interested in Tarantula now. I mean, I think a lot of that literature from that time has gone to used bookstores.
Yeah.
Never seen the light of day again. But what do you suppose this interested in Tarantula is?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing about Tarantula, I mean, you're right. A lot of those underground books from the 60s, they're just kind of obscure cult, you know, moments in literary history. Tarantula, since its publication, and, you know, probably has a lot to do with Bob's fame, but it's never gone out of print. So it's been in print consistently since the early 70s. It was written earlier, but it was finally published in 1971.
And as I understand it, it was something it was almost forced upon him by by his agent who had signed a book contract his behalf.
There's definitely some truth to that. Just to take a step back, there was a literary festival in Tulsa that Magic City Books sponsored back in April or May.
April.
Yeah. And they wanted the Bob Dylan archive to participate in some fashion, and Jeff Martin, who works at Magic City, he had an interest in Tarantula, and he said, could we do something? And I said, sure, why not? So we have a little exhibition that's up right now at the Woody Guthrie Center where you can see some of the manuscript. It kind of traces the history of Tarantula and how the book came into being. And we have some of the manuscript pages, so you could see some of the original, you know, Bob's original edits, and we have some of the song manuscripts. I think we have one. We have one for Subterranean Homesick Blues, and we got another for Like a Rolling Stone. Both songs were written around the writing of Tarantula. And it turned out we did a discussion at the Guthrie Center, and it was packed. I mean, people came out, and they were interested in Tarantula. Again, I was like, I can't believe people came out for this thing. So, you know, the thought was, well, you know, if there's this momentum and we don't have the Dylan Center open yet, we should keep this going. Like, why not? If people are interested, let's get a little bit deeper into this thing. And so, you know, I had the idea, okay, let's do Tarantula on film, which is ridiculous because there is no Tarantula film per se. But there are a number of films that speak to the mood of Tarantula. There were certainly things that Dylan had seen in the 60s that were influential to him. And, you know, it's a way of maybe getting into Tarantula without, like, you know, trying to, like, hit it on the nose, because it's so hard to unpack. It's a very crazy
stream of consciousness type
novel. But, the book kind of has all these different ebbs and flows. But I think if you kind of look at some of the things that Bob was taking in at that time, it does start to make a bit more sense, like William S. Burroughs' books, and, you know, a lot of things that the Beats were doing. So we plotted out this series. Essentially, it's the last Sunday of the month. We had the first one last month. We have another one that's coming up this Sunday, and the final one is in August. And, you know, we're showing things, you know, with Allen Ginsberg. We're showing things with William S. Burroughs. We're showing things with the poet Michael McClure. But we're also showing performance footage and Dylan-related thing. So
it's
see
kind of
Bob
a curated evening of
exactly.
sort of related around the theme of Tarantula.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's a good, I mean, and I think that there's something in the program that speaks to how we're looking to program the Dylan Center, is that we're not going straight down the middle with this thing. It's like all this work and Dylan, you know, it all becomes much more interesting when you see it in almost this like cubist perspective, that no matter where you're standing, it's going to have a little bit of a different, you know, lean to it or perspective to it. And it just makes it so much richer, because then you realize, okay, well, Bob was connected to so many different things and they all fed into one another. And it does start to make a book like Tarantula, which is a real head scratcher, when you see it against, you know, a Red Grooms film, or you see it against one of the films that William S. Burroughs made, or you see it against an Allen Ginsberg reading. It does start to click, and you say, okay, right, I could see that, or I could feel that, or the impression of the book now makes a little bit more sense to me.
And getting to what the center is going to be like, it's also going to be, I mean, there'll be exhibits about the Beats.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, you know, not necessarily saying this is how they influenced Bob Dylan, but more about the Beats themselves, right?
Exactly.
Exactly. I would assume what culture was like up in Minnesota when he was growing
100%.
Up. You know, I mean, that sort of thing.
Yeah, Bob's a good artist. I mean, he's a good figure to be able to do that through because, you know, he's so capacious and so omnivorous in his interests, and he's influenced so much that you can make a strong case for all sorts of things that might seem, well, what is this doing in the Bob Dylan Center? But then when you scratch, you know, the surface a little bit more and you dig a little bit deeper, it begins to make sense. All these things are connected.
Exhibits about the civil rights movement.
Of course,
you know, they use this material. You know, it was used in making the case for civil rights.
Absolutely. You know, and that's a big part of our mission.
Right now, the Woody Guthrie Center does a lot of Grammy exhibits along with the Grammy Museum, sort of museum phase. Will some of that move to the Dylan Center? Will you have actually exhibit space designed for bigger traveling exhibitions?
Yes. One of the floors that we have sketched out in the Dylan Center is a flexible space with moving walls, which was going to allow us, if we see an exhibition anywhere, you know, whether it's in New York or whether it, wherever it is, and we said, oh, this is really appropriate. You know, this would really speak in Tulsa and to the, you know, the Dylan Center would make sense. And we would have the ability to move that to Tulsa. Also, we want to curate a lot of our own exhibitions. And so to have that kind of flexibility. So one of the floors will be dedicated to kind of a multi-use space where we could have different exhibitions come in and out.
Yeah. Now, you said original curation will be a big part of it. Yeah. Will it be more than you curating
the
material?
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, down the road?
Yeah, we hope to partner with writers and artists and historians and all sorts of people, politicians, everybody, you know, who have a fidelity for this material and are interested in it. You know, the big thing for us is we need to keep this thing moving. We need to keep it fresh. We don't want anything to be in there for too long. Since the archive is so vast and we have such a kind of an ocean of film material and audio material, is that we want to move it around almost in like a repertory fashion. So, because again, you know, this is for Tulsa and the surrounding community. It's for the world, of course, but who's going to keep the lights on? It's going to be people, it'll be tourists, no doubt, but also people in the community who might say, what's going on at the Dylan Center this week, in the way that you would like look in the paper and say, what's playing at this movie theater, that movie theater, and say, oh, wow, they have this coming up in a couple of weeks. I want to check that out. So we really want to keep it a very active and alive space because I think that's a way to just have people come back. We don't want it to be a one and done situation.
Michael Chaykin, good luck with the center as it begins to take shape, and good luck with the film series, which takes place this Sunday at 2 at the Woody Guthrie Center.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Was in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
Michael Chaykin is the curator of the Bob Dylan Archive. He'll be hosting a second film event this Sunday at 2 o'clock at the Woody Guthrie Center, curated around Bob Dylan's book, Tarantula. More information on the activities of the archive at bobdylanarchive.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.
Everything up to that point had been left unresolved. Try imagining a place where it's always safe and warm. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.